You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
When we hear the word wealth, most of us immediately think of money. Rands, dollars, kwacha, shillings, kwanza, whatever your currency. We think investments, assets. But what if true wealth is much broader, much richer, and more layered than that? What if wealth was also about the time you own, the health that sustains you, and the relationships that hold you? Tonight, we are joined by Tich Magonese, a thinker, leader, and voice who has challenged many to look at wealth differently. He helps us stretch beyond the narrow lens of financial gain to explore how social, time, and health wealth all connect to form the real currency of a meaningful life. So lean in, because tonight we're not just talking about wealth, we're talking about what makes life truly rich. Tich, good evening and welcome back to the show.
Good evening, Pumi. How are you? And good evening to your listeners. It's great to speak with you guys again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been.
Had a conversation.
It has been. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Alrighty. Let's begin with the basics. When you hear the word wealth, what comes to your mind first?
Oh yeah, cool. That's a great way to start.
Yeah.
I think wealth is capability.
Mm.
I think that's what it is. And that capability would normally come, I wouldn't call it effortlessly, but there's an abundance of capability, of possibilities.
Yeah.
So when I think of wealth, I'm thinking, how do I maximize possibilities? How do I make it possible for me to be able to do certain things? The traditional sense of wealth is obviously an abundance of financial resources, but we actually find that the difference between those that are supposedly wealthy and those that are not is what wealth enables those who have it to do. So I see wealth as possibilities. So you're creating wealth is creating possibilities.
Yeah. What you're saying to me now is making me think about two things. One is the idea that I've always had about being incapacitated. I know there was an insurance, a life insurance or a policy that I took. And one of the benefits or one of the items in the package was if you become permanently incapacitated. So what you're saying is any incapacitation or incapacitation in any form has a way or can detract or take away wealth. Am I understanding you correctly?
I would actually say it takes away possibilities. It takes away possibilities. So, so if you look at the most basic understanding of the way that we look at wealth, when the holiday comes, what can somebody who's wealthy do? Jump on a plane and
travel,
go off away somewhere.
Sure.
They can do whatever they want to do if they want to stay home. Now there are fancy things like staycations, all these things, right? And somebody who's possibly less wealthy does not have that many possibilities, right? They're probably looking at one of two options, to visit my brother or stay at home. Somebody with financial resources is thinking, visit my brother, go and I've never been to Disneyland, I've never been to Mauritius, I've never been to the Seychelles, and those things are possible, right? So I view wealth as creating possibilities, not just for yourself, but even for your family. So when you consider it as possibilities, I suppose it then leads into our conversation that then says, it can't just be about money because, you know, while money does certainly help and it makes things possible, there are certain things that even with money, you can't do. So if you are unwell and you have money, you may actually not even be able to travel.
For sure.
You know, you may not be able to go to certain places depending on the kind of illness that you've got. So it then takes away from the possibilities that you have. So you'll find that a lack of adequacy in any one area of your life reduces the possibilities of what you can explore with the other facets of your life. So that's the interconnectedness that we were talking about. And even when we start talking about wealth in a more traditional sense, having loads and loads of houses is really, really good. You've got lots and lots of money. But if all, I mean, lots and lots of wealth, but if all your wealth is in houses, how do you buy bread? They need cash to buy bread, right? So then you hear people saying, oh, he's asset rich and cash poor.
And cash poor.
But does that mean he's not wealthy?
No.
It doesn't. It means he's wealthy. But there's an imbalance, right? So this thing is, you know, there's that interconnectedness that we're talking about.
Yeah. And I'm glad you expanded it and even took it there, because the second thing that your initial definition then did was challenge me. And I guess in turn make me want to challenge everybody, because if you're saying it's a matter of possibility and capability, then anyone can be wealthy. As long as they meet the criteria of what wellness in a particular aspect is.
That's true. That's true. So we've narrowed, I think we've got a rather narrow view of wealth, you know, to call it just material possessions. I think actually let's not just call it cash. Let's call it material possessions. To the detriment of other elements of our life. To the extent then that even the excess that we have in terms of wealth makes it impossible for us to be happy, right? So you could work all day and all night and not see your kids and not see your family because while you're working to provide for them, you know, that sounds like a really good reason. But somebody could then turn around and say, you know what, I actually never knew my parents growing up because all they ever did was work, right? And kind of like at that point, I don't know if all the money makes sense. One of the essays I read was, you know, and I'm struggling now to remember the full title of it, but it was basically somebody who was on their deathbed knowing full well that, you know, it's not a case of I'm going to die. It's a case of, you know, I'm going to die pretty soon. And looking back and trying to figure out, you know, what were the things they wish they had done with their time. And they said rather cynically that, you know, it's amazing that I spent so much of my time working so, so hard. But right now at the end, I'm not even thinking to myself, maybe I should have spent an extra hour in the office on that Friday. Or you know, I should have spent an extra weekend working. It becomes more and more apparent to them that the things they regret not doing are things that were well within their power to do, but they never did. Having a single lens of what wealth is would then lead us to live an almost imbalanced life because we only ever take care of one aspect of our life and not other aspects of our life.
So I'm a person who really struggles when it comes to work particularly. I have a proclivity to be a workaholic. When I get into work, I work. I don't sleep. I don't check my phone. I really get into it. And a friend of mine said something that really struck me, like it hurts me so much. He said to me, you'll get to the destination. You'll get to where you're trying to go. But unfortunately, if you're not careful about how you steward your relationships, there'll be no one there with you.
This is true.
Thought, whoa, because I've got a backlog. Can I say my birthday was exactly a month ago, 25 July. There are still texts I have not opened from my birthday because I've been so busy. And he said to me, you will get there, but no one will be there. surely you don't want that. And to hear you say this for me is like double conviction, because in all honesty, we cannot be intentionally and of our own will tipping the scale or creating the imbalance when we can find harmony.
Yeah, so I'm gonna answer that like in a bit of a roundabout way.
Mm.
The faith to which I profess has a doctrine that they call temperance.
Mm.
And the doctrine of temperance kind of goes against the understanding of a lot of people about what my faith professes, right?
Mm.
Because I think a lot of people's experience of my faith is it's a don't kind of religion.
Yes, yes.
Don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And there are many that. So I'm not going to point them out because I don't want us to get distracted from this particular conversation.
Yeah.
But in the midst of that, almost the core identity of that faith around the don'ts is this very strong doctrine of temperance.
Mm.
And temperance kind of seems to go completely against the doctrine of don't, because temperance says moderation.
Mm-hmm.
So temperance almost says to you, you can do anything.
Yeah. Just don't go overboard.
In moderation, right? And when you look at that doctrine, I think it addresses, you know, the issue that you raised to say there is so much of you in one sphere of your life that there's very little of you left for the other spheres or the other components of your life.
Mm.
So you're being intemperate as far as your work is concerned. Because the reality also is if you spend all your time in your relationships, no matter how important they are, you kind of also need to pay rent, and you also kind of need to fulfill those dreams, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that you don't work and you spend all your time in relationships is not necessarily better than you working and spending no time in your relationships. Somewhere in the middle there is an adequate balance.
Yeah.
And I think temperance is what it is. So work. So even when you look at scripture and you read the story of creation, say the world was created in 6 days.
Mm.
On the seventh day, you know, God rested.
Yeah.
And it even says to us, you know, 6 days you need to do your work.
Yeah.
And on the seventh day you rest.
Mm.
So that is almost teaching us about moderation and worrying about other things other than the things that we think matter.
Mm.
So when we start talking about health, I mean about wealth, and we look at health, we look at relationships, we look at time, those things constitute wealth because they are things that give us value. Because at its core, wealth is about value. That's what it is, you know. Why are papers worthless until they've got bits of ink on them that say they're dollars or rands or cents? Do you know what I mean? It's placing value on those things.
Mm.
So wealth is about value, right? So anything of value can constitute wealth.
Sure.
That's why even when you start talking about wealth, it comes in different forms.
Yeah.
You know, some people believe in Bitcoin, some people buy gold, some people have got rare cars, some people have got multiple houses. And the only reason that these things end up giving them the label of being wealthy is because of the value that is placed in those things. So anything of value can actually constitute wealth.
Mm.
And anything of value is what people seek after.
Mm.
So if you're seeking to say, how can I be wealthy? What are the things that you value? What are the things that matter? What are the things that people value? What are the things that matter to people? And each one of those things, each and of themselves, actually constitutes wealth.
Mm.
And if you think that they're not valuable, maybe take a look at the things or the lengths that people will go to in order to attain them.
Right?
So let's talk health, for instance. What lengths do we go to remain healthy?
Should we go to gym?
That's not even half the story. You know, all the fad diets, there's a whole industry.
So much.
Multi-billion-dollar global industry of people just seeking to get healthy. I now on YouTube, I've seen something called Tai Chi. I hope this is not considered to be an advert. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. But every single ad now is about this thing called Tai Chi that you should be doing because you want to look young and healthy.
Hey,
and
kombucha tea.
That's
the one I've been seeing.
Mm. Yeah, ketamine diet, keto diet, this diet, and, you know, all sorts of wonderful things. Mm. Right? We're trying to invest in health. Mm. So we actually view that as wealthy. We see a healthy person as having a form of wealth that we all seek to attain, you know. So there are people that have all the money in the world and are not healthy, that spend an inordinate amount of time just trying to get healthy. I know a late musician who used to sleep in an oxygen tank because he'd been convinced that, you know, that would give him a longer life. I don't know how well that works because he's not around anymore.
Oh.
But I think it just underscores the point that wealth is actually all the things that we seek to attain.
Mm.
And happiness, even happiness in and of itself, is a form of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to invest our time and our resources and our energies to ensure that we attain happiness. Because we all know there's people with loads of the traditional definition of what wealth is, loads of money, loads of houses, loads of cars, but they're not happy.
They're not.
And they are.
And why do you think society's definition of wealth has become so tightly tied to money or skewed in that direction?
I think there's a belief that money is the start. I think that money is at the center of it all. To say, you know, as long as you've got money, you can do whatever it is that you want to do. But I don't think life is necessarily about doing. There's a strong component of it, which is about just being able to live peacefully, have peace of mind, not constantly look over your back, you know, have your faculties about you, have relationships. But I think we just live in an age where, you know, perhaps being the last days, if we were to look at scripture and how in the last days love grows cold and men will be lovers of money. Maybe that's where we are, you know.
Yeah, no. And is financial wealth not the foundation for the other forms of wealth? And maybe foundation is giving it too much weight. But is it not perhaps the entry into the other forms of wealth?
I'd like to almost think that financial wealth, more often than not, is an output of balance in other elements or other facets of your life.
Okay.
I don't think it's the beginning. I don't think it's a foundation. It's certainly important. I think having money helps.
It does help.
But happiness itself is not necessarily restricted to those that have money. I know that, you know, there are possibly also people that don't have money that are not necessarily happy either. I almost want to go back and hide behind the doctrine of temperance to say where we are fighting, you know, to create excess is where we should be fighting to create balance. And that balance means different things to different people.
Yeah.
But it's at its very core, it's just making sure that as a person, you are showing up in all the areas that matter. You're looking after your health, you're taking care of your relationships, you're putting in an honest day's work, you're taking time to rest. I think that's real wealth. I think those are the real foundations for a successful life, in my view.
Yeah.
I think there are people that are wildly successful. And it comes at a cost. And I think sometimes we never really stop to think of the cost of being, you know, wildly successful like that. But when we look around us, I think we see various examples of people who, because they've only ever worried about one thing, are lacking in so many other areas.
Yeah.
They've gotten to the mountaintop, as your friend put it, to find that they're, you know, they've left everyone behind. And suddenly, you know, that the mountaintop is a lot colder than it should be.
So because I do want to stretch and broaden our scope and view of wealth, how I'm going to approach the conversation next is us talking about time wealth. And then we'll move into health wealth. We'll then have social wealth, which is the one that I need the most because we're struggling. We'll then talk about the interplay between these. And finally, perhaps if we still have time, some personal reflections maybe of your own just as we tie up the conversation. Are you cool with that direction?
Yeah, sure. We can do that.
All righty. So time is often called the great equalizer. What does time wealth really look like? And perhaps let me say to you, because these things are also quite subjective.
I think for me, there are things that I'm obligated to do. There are obligations that I have, whether it's to my family or to the job that I have. But in the midst of that, there are also things that I want to do for me, right? And I need to be able to structure my time so that I am paying attention to each of those three different things. So if I only can find time to do only the things that I want to do, then there's a problem because I have an employer who has a contract with me that expects me to perform certain duties. And I have a wife and children who also expect me to show up. So in creating time wealth, I am saying, how can I be temperate with my time? How can I spend as much time in each of the different spheres of my life as is necessary for me to be able to create a balance? And sometimes you could actively, if I've got a job that requires me to work 24 hours a day, I no longer have time for myself. I no longer have time for my family. That's a problem for me. So time wealth says, what are the things that are important to me? And do I, you know, live, or does my life permit me to spend time doing those things or not? And if not, then I have poverty, you know, as far as time is concerned. And I need to work towards making sure that I have time to do the things that are important to me.
And, you know, speaking or going back onto that temperance thing, when I try to think of time, and geez, man, time is such an interesting thing. When I think about time and managing ourselves around time, because I think also the idea of time management is the one that trips us up because we can't manage time. 24 hours is 24 hours. We can only manage ourselves around time. When I think of temperance, I think about the stretch of 6 days versus the 1 day of rest. Meaning if you can really apportion time in the day, I it might be difficult. I know it is personally for me, but I think it is possible to apportion a certain period of time in a day over the 6 days to do the things that are important, check in with family and friends, do some work in the time that is allocated, cook, and all of those things that are necessary. I think temperance is actually the key to it all, apportioning some time to everything that is important and everything that you value. I think that could be a way to, I guess, equalize or balance the scales. What are your thoughts?
I think you sum it up really, really well, right? To say that, what are the things that matter and how do I apportion my time to the things that matter so that your time is not taken only by one thing, you know, that's creating an imbalance. So, you know, and when you bring the doctrine of temperance into it, the doctrine of temperance is purely apportionment. You know, do as much as is necessary to attain and don't go beyond that. You know, I know that, you know, in the religious circles I am in, when people talk temperance, a lot of people immediately start thinking food, right?
Yes.
Don't eat too much, right?
Yeah.
That's not the only example.
No.
But all we're saying is have a fair share. When you're full, stop. Right? That's being temperate. So also when you've gone off to work in the morning, it's 8 o'clock. Yeah, we know there may be pressures. Mm. Sometimes you need a few more hours. Mm. But, you know, kind of get home at 6 o'clock, you know, switch off, unwind, unhook, you know, talk to your family, sit down, have a laugh, cook if you're the cooking type, have a meal, you know, catch a show on TV if that's what you do. Create that balance. So that your time is not only spent on only doing one thing.
Yeah. Maybe let me ask this. Why do so many high earners struggle with time poverty? Is it a consequence? Is it the only way you can be a high earner?
I don't think it's the only way. Mm. I've in my experience seen people that are high earners that absolutely make time for the things that matter to them. It's also sometimes about creating boundaries, because I think the world constantly demands. And if you say yes, they continue demanding. I know certain people that are very particular about their time, where, you know, whether it's calls that they don't take after a certain time, or whether it's you know, setting time aside in their diaries. I've seen people that do that, actually.
Or 4 o'clock is 4 o'clock. I'm out of here.
4 o'clock is 4 o'clock. Yeah. I'm picking my daughter up from school at 4 o'clock. So I am going to do that. Mm-hmm. My daughter's got a play at school tomorrow, so I'm going to go off to the school to watch a play. And I find if we are deliberate and we are diligent with our work, it's kind of difficult to want to jump out at 2 o'clock to go and watch your daughter play soccer if your report is late, right?
Yes.
Then that just doesn't make sense. Mm. So again, you know, the issue of temperance comes along to say, if you maintain the balance, it makes sense for somebody to say, you know, all my work is done, all my work that's due is done, my reports are in, now I need to go and see my daughter. But what happens is, sometimes when we are disorganized in one facet of our life,
Titch,
we give up time in other parts of our life to make up for the disorganization in another part. But what we're actually doing is we are multiplying the disorganization, because then it just, you know, it snowballs. So time poverty in a lot of instances for me is actually, it's a symptom.
Yeah.
It's not a reality. It's a symptom of perhaps not setting boundaries, or perhaps disorganization in one part of your life, creeping into another part of your life, and then thus creating that poverty.
You know, what you're saying now reminds me of a revelation I got about a year ago when I was asked to do some presentation at my alumni vids. And I remember reading Exodus 20 verse 8 so differently. That text says, remember the Sabbath day, or remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Yes. And then it says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, right? I was struck at remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. What then got revealed to me, or what that text suggested, is on Monday, remember that a Sabbath day is coming so you can keep it holy. And so what you do on Monday should be in light of the fact that in 7 days or in 6 days at that point, I'm going to be resting. What you do on Tuesday is in light of the fact that you're going to be resting. And so apart from just the Sabbath commandment, I think when we think about things like that, I have 6 days to do this because on the seventh day I'm going to rest. Or maybe not, you're not even resting, but all I've got is 6 days to do this thing. And I am going to do it in the 6 days. I think it is Parkinson's law that says a task expands according to the time that you've given it. So that's why somebody can actually write and complete an essay that is due tomorrow, because you told yourself, I only have tonight to do it, right?
I only have tonight.
100%. Yeah. So when we think about, and you gave the example of somebody who hasn't really done a good job, but they want to leave early. No, if we can think about the fact that I have a school play to attend. And so I've only got an hour to get this thing right, or to get it done and to get it done right. It really informs our productivity, how we show up, the quality of the work that we do, and the quality of our presence and our experience at the next thing, because we know we've completed what needs to be done. And I think God could rest on the Sabbath day because every other day was good. every other day or every other thing was very good. He was done. I think a lot of us don't get done, and that's why we're so restless.
But it's also because we don't, that's not the lens that we use, right? You'll be shocked that, you know, a lot of us just, we just go.
Yeah.
We wake up and we are going.
Yeah.
There is no thinking of, okay, this needs to get done now, and this needs to get done now, and this needs to get done by this time. And so we are constantly chasing the clock,
yeah,
as opposed to divvying up our time on the basis of the things that we need to do.
Yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, the doctrine of temperance is really, really important, because it's forcing you to look at all the other things. Because if you only have one thing to do, it's very difficult to say be temperate, because you only have one thing to do. And there are no options. But temperance itself is actually telling you that there are options. And in exercising those options, you need to exercise the limit so that you leave room for other things.
Yeah, temperance actually presupposes abundance.
Yes. So it says there's more. There's this thing is there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So don't just because it's there. So whether it's food, you know, whether it's time, there are 24 hours. So I'm going to spend 24 hours on my PlayStation. Yeah. You could, because there are 24 hours.
Yeah.
But you also need to eat. You need to bath. Maybe you need to go to school. Maybe you need to have a conversation with your siblings. So be temperate about it. And I think the other reality that we need to manage is, I think in a lot of instances, we've also glorified excess, right? So, you know, walking around saying, oh, I haven't slept for 3 hours, for 3 days because I've been so busy.
Oh,
is seen as a badge of honor.
Yes.
It's not.
It's
you
not.
Know, you are cruising for a bruising when you're doing that, because now you get people suddenly, you know, falling down dead, and everybody wonders what happened, you know. And a lot of it is because we are not temperate. We are doing so much of one thing that we can't do anything else, and it's got consequences.
And while you're there, Tej, how do we balance health and ambition?
I got a chance to mentor some guy from work, and during the course of our conversation, I was able to articulate something that I'd struggled to articulate for a really long time, and I'll refer to it now. You know, he says to me, "Oh, you know, I this is where my career is. I think I'm ready for the next step." And I said, "Oh, okay, no, that's really, really cool." So before we talk about your work, how do you take care of ingredient zero in your recipe for success? And he says to me, what's ingredient zero? I said, ingredient zero is a healthy body and a healthy mind. There's absolutely nothing you can achieve in this world without a healthy body,
man,
and a healthy mind.
That
is ingredient zero. That is the first input to anything that you want to do. So I want to climb Mount Everest, the loftiest goal in the world, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Right? I can't do that without a healthy body or a healthy mind.
Never.
Right? So I want to be CEO. I can't do that without a healthy body and a healthy mind. Right? I can't be at my best without a healthy body and a healthy mind. So if you were to say to me, you know, is financial wealth the first, you know, the foundation of wellness? Is this a foundation of wealth? I wouldn't. I would say a healthy body and a healthy mind are the first ingredient in that recipe.
That's the conclusion I was coming to as well when you're speaking, that it seems to be the vehicle. The vehicle to wealth is health.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. You've got to take care of the body. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere. So, and we find that in a lot of instances, the people that don't make time to be healthy, health will force itself to be given time.
And it won't health just be it won't just be time that it requires of you now. It will be money as well.
Precisely.
Ah, geez.
Precisely. So for me, that's the element. I don't think you can be successful if you're not healthy enough to be able to carry that success, because, you know, Worst case scenario is, you know, right on the cusp of this wonderful achievements that you think your body fails you. And we have multiple examples of that. And, you know, things happen to people. We accept that, you know, it's we are still this side of heaven, as a friend of mine is fond of saying. But I think taking care of our health and doing our best to be as healthy as we can should be the first step in us trying to attain whatever wealth we've got. So yeah, even if it's a job, it doesn't matter if I can't turn up for that job.
Oh.
It makes no difference whether I've got the job or not.
Yeah. Let's head on into social wealth and talk about relationships, networks, and community. How do you define social wealth?
I think I always try to take a step back. Mm. Firstly, we are communal creatures.
Yeah.
We cannot survive by ourselves. We thrive in community. Somebody once said to me, the man who decides that he wants to run away from people and go and live by himself in the wilderness is probably wearing a shirt that was made by another human being. Or a pair of shoes that were made by somebody else, you know, and carrying a backpack that came from a factory that was
manned by people. Anyway,
you know what I mean, right? So that's the design of human beings, you know, and you know, for the biblical skeptics who may be amongst us, I think, you know, tonight you really probably feel you want to punch me in the face because, you know, at the inception, after God made Adam, his first word was, it's not good for him to be alone.
Yeah.
And let me make him a helper.
Yeah.
And I think that's the design of man. That's in our design. We are communal creatures.
Yeah.
We cannot be alone, and we need to spend time building relationships for that very purpose.
Yeah.
We thrive amongst other people and not just by ourselves. I would almost put it that bluntly, but if we take it back to where our conversation started when we were talking about, you know, saying temperance and the allocation of time, it becomes even more important if we establish that we are communal creatures.
Mm.
We cannot survive in isolation.
Yeah.
The design of man is not one of solitude.
Yeah.
So if you are saying to yourself, I would like to be really, really successful, and there are no people around you, and you're not investing in people, and you're not also enjoying the benefit of company from other people,
it's not
going to be a great life, you know, because even if you build the greatest company in the world and no one wants to work for it,
yeah,
is it really the greatest company in the world? Is he doing all the work? It's not. So our relationships matter. We should be investing in these relationships.
Mm.
We should be making ourselves people that are relatable in as much as we want to relate to others.
Yeah. Titch, do you think our digital age is eroding or enhancing true social wealth?
So there's a place.
Yeah.
There's a place for all this digital advancement.
Okay.
But I worry sometimes that we lose the ability to interact with people because we spend so much time, you know, behind our screens and not interacting with other people. There's a huge benefit to interacting with people and understanding them. A face-to-face interaction is never the same as a digital interaction, even when I suppose you're using video communication. There's something in us that requires the warmth of humanity to embrace us, for us to feel whole. And I don't know if the online or the digital world makes it, you know, can reciprocate that, can replace that in our lives. So I would always recommend a healthy mix, a healthy balance.
Yeah.
If you can, because this is the world we live in. It's technically advanced, but I don't think anything will replace, you know, I always call it the privilege of being able to interact directly with another person.
Mm. And I don't know, man. I'm a structure person. I think in structures. And we already determined that at the heart or the core of wealth truly is health, right? I'm wondering if there is an order then in this hierarchy of what comes next and what follows and what ends. Or is that case specific? Does it depend on what people have an abundance of in that time? Or is there, and I don't want to say a rule, but is there an order that could work well if applied? And perhaps as you answer this also, this is a thought I had earlier, I just forgot to ask it. The idea or the concept of seasons, when someone is like, this is the season for me to grind, or this is the season for me to do this and that, because I know that when I do this, I'm setting myself up for that, and it'll be easier if I, you know, that kind of thinking, that this is the season for me to go all in and to go hard. What is your thoughts around that as well?
Okay. So I think to your first question, I once read a phrase that said, youth is wasted on the young.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and people usually say it when, you know, they probably see a baby climb up a tree and fall down and just stand up and dust themselves off and carry on playing, right?
Yeah.
Because they are thinking, if that had been me, you know, this would have been a whole a whole movie production with extras and stuntmen and all of that, you know,
and
just
sounds,
to put them back together again. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know? And I think that's part of the joke of life, you know, that, you know, for the average person, when you are young, you have health. And you don't even know how important this thing is, right? So sometimes when you're 45, when you're 50, and you're just trying to stay awake until 11 o'clock, and by 9 o'clock you're yawning and you're thinking to yourself, is it past midnight yet? And you think back to when you were in university and you could stay up all night and watch the sunrise for kicks. Just because you could, right? So we don't realize how vital being healthy is when we are most healthy. Because we just don't think, in your 20s or your 30s, you're not thinking, do I have enough energy to make it through the night? You're just making it through the night.
Yeah.
You know, no one's asking you to do it. So I think that then kind of fools us into worrying about all the other things that we need to worry about and not necessarily about preserving our health, you know. And I say that because then I think at that point is where we need to be setting those boundaries around temperance, around, am I getting enough rest? Am I getting some exercise? Am I eating right? You know, am I checking up on my health? Am I seeing a physician regularly just to make sure everything is as it should be? And I think that's kind of what messes it up for us. I always think that the beginning point, if there is an order, it's always a healthy mind and a healthy body. Everything else needs to follow from there. So if you're trying to do anything, I think if you start by taking care of your mind, taking care of your body, then you have a fighting chance. You have a ticket to the game. And you can't, I don't think you can run away from that. I don't think you can run away from that. I think everything else can follow, because even if we're saying that having a good education enables you to then, you know, get a great job and do your work well, you know, you probably start rising through the ranks and hopefully you start making six figures. But without a healthy mind and a healthy body, all of that is just not possible.
Yeah. Seasons.
So when we start talking seasons, I think there is something to be said about that. You know, there are, you know, I think when you read Ecclesiastes, it talks about seasons for everything under the sun. And that's true. You know, there are certain things that, you know, we kind of expect you to be doing later in life that perhaps you shouldn't be doing earlier in life. And there are things that we expect you to be doing earlier in life that later in life we kind of start wondering if everything is okay up there.
Are you having a midlife crisis?
You know, you know, the skinny jeans, you know, the tight tank tops, stomach bulging over the belt buckle of the skinny jeans, and we're looking and thinking, 20 years too late to this party. What's going on? Right? That's true. But I think even then, I think temperance.
Yeah.
Even then, be temperate. Because you are right. There are seasons. And it's right for us to embrace the seasons when they come. That awareness, that realization gives us hope. Because sometimes the seasons are not good seasons.
Yeah.
But realizing that it's a season says this moment will pass and another will come, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it's a time of plenty, you know, the time of the seven sleek cows, you know, and you know that the time of the seven skinny cows is going to come.
Mm.
Yes, by all means, make hay, but still temperate.
Yes.
You can't, there are things that are fundamentals. So like you can't sacrifice ingredient zero because of the season. Because the season will end and you are not there to enjoy the end or the beginning of the new season. Because ingredient zero only is one, eh?
Yeah.
A healthy mind and a healthy body.
That's one. Oish.
That's one of one. You are not walking into the body shop and saying, right,
I've had enough of this one.
No, you are not.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, that's really important. Yes, seasons will come, embrace them, take opportunity. Because, I mean, you can use that analogy across many different things to say, well, this is the opportunity. It has come. Mm-hmm. Do I let it go? No. Embrace that. Take full advantage of it.
Yeah.
But be temperate. Still continue to take care of ingredient zero, a healthy mind and a healthy body.
Mm.
Otherwise, there's no point. We are not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. Ooh, this conversation stretched me, and I'd love to believe that everybody else who's listening, you know, I think what came out for me is that real wealth is not just about money in the bank. It really is about the hours we own, maybe not own, but the hours we are able to manage ourselves around, the health we preserve, whether it is physical or mental, and the people we walk this road with, because like you said, we are communal from creation in our DNA. Even when God was creating, let us make man, just from the very beginning, that was always the plan, community. And I really think the listeners should grab out of this the idea that maybe wealth that can be counted is not the only wealth that should be chased. And perhaps maybe it doesn't even need to be chased when everything else is in order, because when you're healthy in your mind and in your heart, when you've got community that you do life with and networks that you can tap into, and because you are healthy, you can apply yourself in the right way, that kind of wealth that can be counted will follow you anyway. It will find you because you are adding value, because you've understood the things that are valuable and you're taking care of those things. That's just my takeaways from this conversation. I don't know if you've got any parting shots or maybe your concluding thoughts on everything that we've discussed.
So you gave a beautiful summary, you know, when you say wealth is not only the things that can be counted.
Mm.
There are things that we can't count. You can't count health.
No.
You know, no one walks around with 20 kgs of health compared to somebody else's 2 kgs of health, right?
So 20 We're counts of health. Mental health.
Yes, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really, really beautiful summary. I think for me, you know, like parting shots, I think, you know, is people talk about business and how, you know, business is the be all and end all. And maybe they're right, right? But, you know, when you take it to that point of community, when you start a business and you're sitting in your house alone and you are coming up with these brilliant ideas and you're phoning people and you're starting to sell, you know, just to underline that thing of community. Before that business is even probably breaking even, the first thing you're thinking is like, hey, I think I need somebody who can take calls.
Yeah.
You're already starting to build a community.
Yeah.
So everything, everywhere we are, these are all just little communities, starting from the home itself, where you have a mom, you have a husband, you've got a father, you've got kids, you know, maybe even you've got a helper. You go to the office, this one is the messenger, this one is the driver, this one is the manager.
Mm.
Again, that's a little community. So that communal or social wealth, the ability to connect with other people, I think is what we should describe social wealth as.
Yeah.
The ability to connect with other people, to be of value to other people, and to also be able to benefit from that relationship with other people. That's what social wealth is. And it's really, really important. And, you know, it's probably something we didn't talk a lot about. And, you know, when we said we are communal people, I think sometimes people don't, you know, maybe some may not have understood that. Mm. But what I actually mean is the ability to add value to other people's lives and to also be able to recognize the value that they bring to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking abuse. I'm not talking taking advantage of other people, but I'm talking of healthy connections, healthy relationships, the ability to pick up the phone, you know, to be, what are you doing this weekend? Mm. Do you want to go for a walk? The ability to be able to say, I was thinking this is a great idea. Mm. What do you think of it? Can I bounce it off you?
Mm.
That is true social wealth.
Oh,
but in closing, I think what I would want to say is the doctrine of temperance is one that we have narrowed to, you know, what you eat and what you drink.
Mm.
But I think temperance is actually about a way of life.
Yeah.
How it is that you actually make sure that your life is balanced. Mm. And how it is that you ensure that those things that can't necessarily be counted are still a part of your life.
Mm.
You know, and they're adding value to you. And that's how you create wealth.
Yeah.
That's how you create wealth. And the last thing would be ingredient zero. Healthy mind, healthy body.
Yes.
You've got to start there.
Mm.
And if you're not there, I think take time to go back to create a healthy body, create a healthy mind.
And I'm so glad you're ending it on that, because when you've initially introduced this concept to us, it was around ability or capability rather and possibility. And I think a lot of us have got the capability, and the possibility then is up to us. What we do with that capability is completely up to us. And so it behooves us then to make the choices that will maximize on the capability, like you mentioned earlier. Thank you so much for this chat.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Pumi. Have a great evening and
it's
a great
always
evening.
Always amazing. You too. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
And with that, my people, I am Nompumelelo Mbonane, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.